It's time for another episode of the Infinite Loopback Podcast, an Apple-themed technology podcast with your hosts, Brian Baggett, Jim Graham, Brad Tarver, and Jason Young. Well, 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 gentlemen, we've had our iPhone X for a few days. I'm quite pleased. So does the iPhone X live up to your expectations?
Absolutely.
Hell yes.
We've had the phone for several days now. You guys had it a couple days before I did because I was on safari in Texas. What is your favorite aspect of the phone so far? What have you liked about it the most?
The screen, this big, huge screen that's gorgeous. I mean, the blacks are so black, the phone is so bright, and the speed. I mean, I don't know if y'all have noticed this, but just with apps in general, all my apps, it just seems like, man, they are just hopping. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, the speed is pretty awesome. I'm really, really impressed with Face ID. I mean, I know that's kind of the easy cop-out, jump on the easy one to say that you like it. But, man, it makes you feel like you don't even have any kind of security on it, but you know that you do. And one of the really cool things I like is you look at your phone on your desk and it shows you got iMessage notifications or Telegram notifications, but it doesn't tell you anything. And then you just kind of glance at it and all those hidden messages decrypt themselves and you can actually see the content of it. So that was kind of cool on the home screen.
Yeah, I would have to agree. Face ID has worked very, very well for me. I've only had like once or twice out of the dozens of instances a day where I unlock the phone. So it's been pretty reliable. So I'm assuming it's been good for you too, Jason.
Yeah, I mean, I use this device tons throughout the day. And, you know, just like the little touches of, for instance, you go to Safari and if you're using stored passwords, you go to a website, then all of a sudden you see the little Face ID logo come up and you're like, what is that? And then it fills in your username and password, right? That was kind of a neat touch that I wasn't expecting. Overall, I mean, like Jim said, right, the device is smoking fast. I will say that the first hour, I kind of hated the notch. The notch looks not great on the setup screens, right? So on the, you know, when you're first powering the phone on, you're going through all the, do you want to restore from iCloud or whatnot? All those screens are essentially solid white with just black text. And the notch just sticks out like a sore thumb. But once you've gotten, you know, your apps in and you've got some use out of it, I kind of don't even notice a notch anymore.
I've had some Face ID issues. I wouldn't say a lot, but, you know, a couple of times a day, it'll end up showing me the keypad. And then all of a sudden, then it logs me in. Like a couple of times a day, it does that to me where it shows the, you know, like, hey, type in your thing. And I kind of give it a dirty look. And it unlocks. So maybe I just need to give it a dirty look to start with. You know, I was really tired when I got home Saturday night and set it up. So I had my really tired face on. So maybe that was it. But overall, I mean, it's still, like Jason said, it's kind of odd. It just works as far as it doesn't make it seem like you have security on your phone, but you do. It's really kind of weird like that.
Yeah, I've liked the Face ID a lot, and I like the fact that everything that used Touch ID really didn't need to be modified to use Touch ID. I mean, I'm sorry, to use Face ID. I especially like 1Password, having that support right out of the gate. That makes things so much nicer than it used to be. With Touch ID, it would always, whenever I'd go into 1Password, it would prompt me to put in the code and it would have the little thumbprint underneath it. No matter what I did, no matter what I set it to, it seems like it would always default to that. Whereas I haven't had that problem with Face ID, so I like that a lot. The notch, I would agree, during the setup screens, it was pretty annoying. But after that, it really sort of fades into the background and you don't notice it as much when you're in apps. Your day-to-day use, you just don't notice it. So for most apps that don't support the notch, they're usually beneath where the notch is, so it's slightly less screen real estate. So that's not usually a big distraction. Of course, Telegram is my most annoying app right now because it really doesn't support it.
Yeah, I second that. Telegram, the way that it, you know, as you're scrolling up the screen, right, it is quite annoying.
Yeah, I think that's more annoying than the notch is the apps that aren't updated yet, that either squashed into the kind of the middle section of the phone with the gap at the bottom or the top, or the ones that are made to kind of expand on their own, they end up with the, I don't know what they're going to call that thing at the bottom, the home screen indicator thing at the bottom, like the line, like that, you know, you end up with that over part of the app, like it's, you know, over something that, you know, you have to use a control on the bottom. So that's kind of annoying. If the app is made to use all the real estate that's there, then that happens. Or either it just sits above that and you end up with a lot of a kind of a gap at the top and bottom.
So it's just a matter of all the app developers updating their apps to both support the 8 and the 10.
Yes. Well, more the 10 than just the 8, because the 8 has the same screen real estate as the 6 and the 7.
Right. But I'm just meaning that, you know, they're going to have to be able to support both of them, because they're going to have two screens now, whereas before you had, say, for example, the 6, 6S, and 7, and then the 8, and then the 10 for another month. But, you know.
Yeah, the high-res screen is beautiful. I mean, I can imagine if you're a developer, it is kind of a pain to design around those curved edges and the weird notch at the top and how to get that done. And especially if you're keeping backwards compatibility with not even just the 8, but, you know, when you talk about going all the way back to what's the classic, is that what they call, which is the little one that they still sell?
The SE.
Yeah, the SE. Can you imagine having to develop something to, you know, that fits and looks nice on the SE screen, but then also fits and looks nice on this big, beautiful OLED display? I mean, that's, you know, that's magic.
I tell you what else is kind of magic, though, is I am so surprised after 10 years of iPhone ownership how quickly I got used to there not being a home button. Day one, I found myself kind of mashing the screen a couple of times, like, you know, where is this button? But you know, I guess I'm at like, what, day 5 or 6 of having the device at this point. And it's just second nature. And now I find myself doing weird things on my work iPhone 6S because, you know, it still has Touch ID and button and, you know, what is it? Control center launches from the bottom instead of the top. And all of those gestures that are new are kind of second nature now. Like I used Apple Pay for the first time today. So that was a little bit different of when you use it, you hold it up and then you have to like click it twice on the side to pay. And then it, you know, reads your Face ID. So that was a little bit different. But again, once you did it, that's kind of the new normal now. I'm just kind of surprised after so many years and so many devices of, I started out on the 3G and had every model since then to be able to kind of give up what was familiar over the course of, you know, less than a week and be, you know, very proficient on the iPhone 10. That's a big positive.
So, Brian, what was your favorite part? The screen, is that what you said, or Face ID?
I really think I like Face ID. The screen is nice. Having a phone that has the True Tone display is also nice. So, you know, where I'm recording this right now in my office, it's kind of, I usually kind of keep it dimly lit most of the time, and the screen sort of takes on almost a night shift-like view in the dark, and then I can walk upstairs and automatically adjust itself. Of course, I've had that on the iPad, but I don't use the iPad as much as I use my iPhone. I will say that I was picking up my iPad and expecting it to automatically unlock after using the Face ID for a day or two.
Yep, I've had that same experience.
This iPad is broken. What's going on? I don't know what's... Oh, yeah, it's still got Touch ID.
So for me, the one kind of gesture that I still find myself kind of kludging with is it's not necessarily the unlock, but it's just like when I pick up my phone, I'm so used to hitting the button to make it come on. And so now, you know, you just got to kind of tap the screen or just pick it up and it comes on. But if it doesn't come on, I'm just like, what do I hit? And then I'm like, oh, yeah, I just tapped the screen. And, you know, you tap the screen and then it almost immediately starts unlocking and you swipe up and it's all in one motion. But sometimes I'll pick it up and it doesn't come on. And I just have that like 2 second pause of, oh, yeah, just tap the screen. You don't hit the button anymore, you know, or, oh, do I need to hit the side button? No, you know, that's kind of.
Did you disable Raise to Wake on your previous phones?
No, it's enabled. No, and it's always been enabled. So I don't know why, you know, just sometimes if it doesn't wake or something, I'm just like, oh, yeah, just tap the screen. And the other thing that is, I would say my least favorite aspect is where they put Control Center now, because that's like the farthest point from your fingers when you're holding the phone. And it's kind of hard to get up to that top right corner. I mean, it really is. It's really a two-handed thing now. Control Center for me is definitely not a one-handed thing, even with the reachability thing, which I guess that kind of works. It's, you got to get used to turning on that reachability, which I turned it on and it's kind of a weird little gesture that you do for it. But Control Center is, to me, not as useful now in the location where you activate it. So,
well, speaking of a pro and a con, right, is I use Instagram a lot. You know, I like looking at other people's photos. I like posting my own stuff, right? And the new cameras are incredible, right? I mean, The standard 1X camera is great. The 2X camera is even way better than it was last year. The front-facing camera, you know, the using it in portrait mode with the true depth is awesome. But Instagram is probably my least favorite app on the new dimensions of the screen, right? Because you use a lot of the bottom right-hand corner. Because I have, you know, a couple accounts, and then the far top left-hand corner to, you know, navigate and go back. So, you know, it is a, like Jim said, right, it's definitely a two-handed device at that point without reachability. And I've got big hands.
See, I find that surprising. I'm going to go back and change my answer in light of this. My favorite aspect is the fact that I get more screen real estate and the form factor of a smaller phone. So I enabled reachability as well, but I don't find myself using it like I did on the Plus. So I'm kind of liking the fact that it's a smaller phone, but I still have that much real estate. I don't use it as a two-handed device either.
Oh, I totally agree with you there. But the Plus was too big for me to actually use because I couldn't do anything with it one-handed. This one, I can do a lot of stuff with the phone one-handed, and plus it's still got that screen that's even bigger than the Plus. I mean, I won't disagree with you there at all. It's definitely a good trade-off of this big huge screen, but the device is not near as big in your hand as a Plus is. Just, you know, I wish they would have put Control Center at a different location or allowed you to, you know, change the
where you activate it from.
Where you activate it from or something like that with Control Center. That would have been nice. That's all I'm saying.
And see, I found the Plus to be less wieldy to go the extreme diagonal corner to diagonal corner. But I do really love the screen on this thing, the 5.8 inches. And in the form factor, I mean, it's barely bigger than a 7, but it's considerably smaller than a 7 Plus.
Are you guys using the inductive charging at all?
Not yet. My chargers that I ordered off Meh haven't come in yet. I think they'll be here tomorrow.
Mine were waiting on me when I got home last week, Jason. They're delaying yours. Mine were in on Thursday or Friday of last week. I plugged it in. It works. It works very slowly. I can see where I set it on my nightstand first, and then I realized that was kind of maybe not the best place to put it. I mean, I could set my phone there at night, but I can plug my phone in at night and it can stay there. So I moved it over to my desk where it's just more of a, instead of putting it in the 12 South high rise thing, I can just set my phone down on the charging pad on the desk and pick it right back up and, you know, kind of keep a trickle charge going on it all day long. So that's what I'm going to try to do with it.
Let's talk about that for a minute, because that's also an interesting thing, too. I've been a big proponent of the 12 South high-rises for a long time. And, you know, in the course of my job, I have to be on the phone a lot. As much as I love AirPods, sometimes I'm on the phone quite routinely more than 2 hours a day. And sometimes my AirPods, I'm lucky if they last 2 hours of continuous use on the phone. So if there's any point that somebody has when it comes to the whole dongle life, hashtag dongle life, where it's been a negative, it would be if you're having to make extended phone calls for a long period of time and you don't want to use AirPods. Outside of that, I'm hardly ever on the phone, but for work, I have to be. So my use case here for the inductive charging, I'm going to show you guys this. I slapped an Apple sticker on this. I'm showing these guys something that you guys can't see, but I'll put a link in the show notes. It is an inductive charger stand, but what's nice about this one, for when I travel, it folds flat, which I very much appreciate. So,
oh, that's very nice.
And of course, you can orient the phone horizontally or vertically. So let's say I'm working from home as I did today, and I have a 2 hour call with a customer. I can turn my phone horizontally, lay it on the inductive charger, plug in my regular ear pods, and talk to my heart's content, knowing that when I get up, we're cool. So for me, that is a great use case where it's very, very convenient. That's not a fault of the AirPods. And if I had, it was never like it was a pretty thing when it had a headphone jack anyway. But I like this because I also can't take the 12 South with me when I travel. I went to Vegas a couple months ago and it broke in my suitcase when I had it in there. And even though the folks at 12 South were really nice and they replaced the part that broke, it's not convenient. I don't want to keep it in its box the whole time it's traveling. Having something like this that I can just fold up, lay flat, and shove in a bag is really, really handy. So on my work desk and my home desk, I'm going to have this stand, this foldable, adjustable, inductive charger on both of those just for, if nothing else, the phone calls and those types of things. I did buy, of course, back, you know, we talked about this earlier, when the 8 came out, I bought the Mophie Puck for inductive charging. Really wasn't using it because, as I've mentioned, my wife keeps her credit cards and a little wallet thing in the back of her case. So her charging wirelessly is not really convenient. She's going to continue to use the 12 South high-rises. They're pretty much more for her at this point. But I did take that Puck and I plugged it. There's a plug underneath my couch on the floor. So I plugged that under the couch in the floor and snaked it up, and it's sitting on the end table near my couch. So that's nice. If I'm sitting there and I'm browsing, you know, the web or whatever, and I'm, you know, running my phone down and I want to charge it, I can simply sit it down while I watch TV for a minute or get up and go to the bathroom, make a snack, whatever, and, you know, sort of passively charge the thing without having to keep a cable and fish it out and plug it in. So as much as I've been lukewarm on the inductive charging, there's definitely some use cases, a couple of cases there where it's kind of convenient, I think.
That's neat. That's a good use case with the plug in the floor. I wish, you know, my 100-year-old building had plugs in the floors, but, you know, cause I usually keep a battery sitting right there by the, on the end table and then plug into there. For the charger itself, I mean, it didn't seem like it was working that fast, but, you know, I think working from home, it'll be convenient. Just set it down, pick it up. I was in the same case you were last week. I spent last week in Mississippi at my mother's house working from there. I was on my AirPods all week long because my whole team was on site somewhere in these meetings, and I was having to connect to them. I would swap back and forth. I would get on my AirPods until they died. Then I would put on my noise-canceling headphones and just kind of listen for a while. Or every now and then I would just have to turn on the speakerphone. But, you know, I was basically on and off charging the AirPods all week because I was using them more than I, you know, ever have normally in a day. I mean, I listen to them all day, but that's not really a problem. I can just kind of I don't mind having to take 15 minutes to charge them if I'm listening to music. But if I'm supposed to be on a call, I can't say, hey, guys, I need to charge my microphone and headset, and I'll call right back in. You can't do that. So
you can take one out and put it in the case and keep one in while it's charging and do that little dance. But again, that's kind of as neat as that is, it's still sort of a pain to have to go through that. And I did that at first when I first got them.
I'm glad to hear you say, like, you know, 2 hours is about what you get. Cause I was thinking mine, I'm like, are my AirPods dying? Am I going to have to buy another set already? But I guess that's probably about normal. I mean, there's nothing to them. I guess I should be surprised that those little things last 2 hours.
Well, there's just a tiny little battery in that little bitty guy. So
it is. And you know, in normal use, if I'm just listening to music or podcasts or whatever, they last a long time. I mean, 5 hours is what the max advertised is. I can at least get 3 or 4 typically without having to do anything. It's fine. It's that hooking it to the phone and actually running the microphone with the speakers that seems to just burn through it quickly sometimes. And I've noticed they charge kind of erratically. I mean, they charge quickly, but there are times I'll put them in the case and I'll go and I'll get one out and the right one's dead and the left one's 100%. It's like you've been in the case the exact same amount of time. It's not like... And then it'll charge really, really fast, and then it's fine again. Anyway, that's a tale for another show. But at any rate, the inductive charging, having that trickle charge, I mean, it doesn't have to be fast. It just has to be doing something. When I take my phone off the charger, I want it to be greater than when I put it on. So if it, you know, if it keeps it from at least dying, I'd be happy with it.
Another thing I've noticed, for the last 2 to 3 months, I've been having problems with my AirPods where they wouldn't pick up for phone calls. Like I could be listening to music and the phone would ring and all of a sudden, you know, no sound in my ears and I couldn't get it to come through the ears. You know, I'd put them back in the case, take them out, turn Bluetooth on, turn Bluetooth off. Sometimes it would come back. Sometimes it wouldn't. It was just, there was no rhyme or reason to why it wouldn't work. Since I've gotten the new phone, I've had no problems at all. So obviously the problems with my old phone, not the AirPods. So it was the phone that was the issue, not the AirPods. So.
Jim, the Bluetooth killer.
Yes.
Well, as high as I am on the iPhone 10, I think myself and you, Brian, had some setup issues. I ended up getting two, one for myself and one for my wife. And, you know, so I took mine out of the box. It said, you know, oh, hey, if you've got another iPhone you want to use to set this one up, you know, just bring it close. I did. That failed miserably. Phone kind of hung up for a while, you know, just kind of sat on a screen doing nothing for over 10 minutes and you're wondering, you know, is something going on or do I reboot, right? So I rebooted on that one. I never could get the screen to come back up to say, you know, do you want to pull from another device? So I ended up having to do an iCloud restore. When I did the iCloud restore, the iPhone 10 shipped with 11.01 and I was already on 11.1. So before it would start the restore, it had to do a firmware update to 11.1 and then did the restore after that. And, you know, that worked out fine. My wife gets home a couple hours later. We, you know, take hers out of the box and it worked flawlessly, right? So don't know what the situation there was on mine. One of them worked, one of them didn't. Where I have had a problem was in transferring my Series 3 Apple Watch over to the iPhone 10. It worked great for a day or two, and then everything stopped, right? So the way that I figured out how it stopped was Siri couldn't connect to anything on my HomeKit, right? It was like it didn't know, you know, I'd tell it, you know, turn on kitchen. It was like, I don't know what kitchen is. So that was kind of a pain, and, you know, I troubleshot it and went to, the, you know, Apple forums and whatnot, and just never could find it. So I ended up doing a unpair and repair, and when I did the repair, right, it hung up for a good while, and I had to start the process all over again. So at this point, right, everything's working. I like it. It just was not quite as seamless as I had hoped for, you know, these two new devices to work together, but they're working together fine now.
I'm glad your setup went good with your wife's device, simply because when she sees me doing something with her phone, you know, and I hit a burp or something, she goes, "What's wrong? Do we need to take it back to the store?" You know, and it's like, "What'd you do wrong?" You know, and you're like, "I haven't done anything wrong."
It's technology, baby. It's technology.
Oh, speaking of taking it back to the store, you know, we talked, I guess, last episode where I had missed the opportunity to add AppleCare at checkout. I tried to go to the Apple Store app. You can add AppleCare to your cart, but it won't let you check out because it's tied to an iPhone 10 device. So I ended up hitting the chat. So for anybody that wants to know how to add AppleCare post-purchase while it's still in the warranty period, you can go to checkcoverage.apple.com, and I went there, plugged in, you know, the device serial number. It sent me a text message. Text message included a run diagnostics. So you have to run a diagnostics on the device you want to add AppleCare to prove that it's not already broken while you're adding coverage. That was pretty painless, and now I've got AppleCare Plus on my iPhone 10.
I went through that with the 6 or the 6S, I think. Yeah, that running the diagnostics via the text message instructions are pretty cool. Yeah, the transfer process was a real mixed bag for me too. The big thing that I worried about more than anything was, you know, I've gotten a lot of health data in my watch since I've had the watch since 2015, and I didn't want it to go away. I've been tracking my progress pretty good. I'm on my 296th day of closing in all of the rings, even while traveling, even while on vacation. I even took walks in Texas to make sure that I was able to close everything in. So I didn't want to lose that data. And the watch, it can be finicky to get that to work. So normally what you do if you're moving from one device to another is you do an iCloud backup, and then you manually unpair the watch, and it's golden. If you do that, it's gonna be fine. Then you figure you do the transfer device thing and it's gonna all work. I had the worst time with this. So I did the transfer migration assistant thing where it detects, hey, you've got a phone nearby. Do you want to transfer over? Same thing happened to me that happened to Jason. The new phone was on 11.02 or 11.03, something like that. Just prior to going on vacation, 4.1 came out for the watch and 11.1 came out for the phone. I updated both devices immediately, of course, because why wouldn't I? And my watch and my phone were at a slightly higher revision than what the new phone was at. So that was, I don't know if that had anything to do with it. It upgraded the phone to 11.1 automatically, but when it got to the iCloud restore, it just barfed and then just gave me a pristine phone with nothing restored. I'm like, okay, this sucks. So I'm super paranoid when I do these things. So before I even tried to do the transfer assistant process, I did a fully encrypted iTunes backup of my phone just so that I had a good copy, even if the iCloud backup didn't work well. I ran through that process, but I had already unpaired the watch. So, long story short, I ended up having to repair the watch with my iPhone 7 Plus and make sure that that was all good. And then I did the transfer assistant again, this time with both devices at 11.1, and everything worked. However, as you guys can remember from Telegram, when I was restoring, it took forever for the health kit data to come back. So I'm sitting there, my phone is almost restored, I'm looking at my watch, and it has none of my workout history. None of that stuff is in there. And I'm like, what is going on? It turns out I was just impatient, and it finally came back.
You may or may not have had a slightly panicked tone in the Telegram message.
It's rare that I encounter something that, A, doesn't make sense, and B, I don't necessarily have the ability to fix. I mean, this is, it's data, it's my data, but it's kept and managed by a process that is like a black box to me. So when it doesn't work, I get a little panicky. However, everything did ultimately work once everything was on 11.1 and I gave it time. I was doing it over my work's Wi-Fi connection, which is like 30 meg up and down. If I'd been doing it at home, it would have probably gone faster. But I'm thinking, come on, man. Come on, get this stuff back. Let's see where it is in the process. And it took forever. The other thing that kind of stinks when you're doing that and it's restoring from iCloud, I have a ton of games on my phone that I never play, and they're all like 1 gig or greater things. And I'm running through like, delete, 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 delete. Let's not bother restoring this 1 gig file when I have other stuff that's more important to get back on the phone. So if you're ever going to do that, it's always a good thing to get rid of the cruft off your phone first, I think. But very annoying that it didn't work.
I just set up new phone. I restored my iCloud, but then I didn't restore any apps or anything. I didn't have any problems with the phone whatsoever. Everything set up just fine. iCloud worked just fine. The watch, it took about 3 tries on the watch. It would pair and it would just kind of get stuck and it would just sit there on that, like the bezel looking screen and not do anything. And I'd reboot the watch and, you know, unpair, repair. And then finally, like on the 3rd try, it just kind of smooth sailing went all the way through and everything worked fine. And I didn't even think about the health like data and all that kind of stuff until Brian mentioned it. And I'm like, well, I guess it's still there. I don't know. I just reset up HealthKit earlier today. It asked me all the questions again. And I went back and looked and all my data was there. So I honestly didn't even think about that data, you know, not restoring. I just assumed it would restore just like contacts or, you know, everything else, calendars and everything. But yeah, that part of, finally, for me, was pretty seamless. I think I've been the one that have had issues in past years with that. So I'll take it this time.
I figured it would, but it's just, I guess I watched pot never boils, I guess is the saying. I kept waiting for it to come back, and if I had just been more patient, it would have probably been fine. Apple let some prominent YouTube stars get early access to the iPhone X, while some established Apple personalities had to wait. And at least one prominent Apple personality was quite salty about that on Twitter and his website, and we won't name any names.
I enjoyed his bitterness so much.
I was very surprised to see, feeling so justified over this perceived slight. It came across as really entitled and petty, and if he hadn't said anything, I don't think anyone would have even noticed it. It just seemed really weird to even point it out. Like, why is that not even beneath your notice? Why would you even call that out if you're this person?
The vitriol was strong that day.
His mentions were pretty funny too. I don't know if you went and read those, but those were quite the hoot as well. So there's a blog called 137PR run by a guy named Matt Alexander, and he had a great take on why Apple gave access to these YouTube stars. And it made perfect sense, right? So if you're a diehard Apple fan and you're reading these sites, why do they want to waste time marketing to you anyway? You know you're going to go out and buy the thing. They know you're going to go out and buy the thing. They're not really worried about it. So that was one aspect of it. The other part is everyone is caught up on the, it's a $1,000 smartphone, despite the fact that, you know, 256 gig iPhones that have been around for a couple of years at least were already like $20 shy of $1,000. So, you know, carriers and Apple offer this 0% interest. There's an option to upgrade every year. For most people, this shouldn't even be a big deal. I don't know anyone that goes and buys their phone outright. Everyone seems to have latched onto this. Coworkers have latched onto it. My family has latched onto it. People I would not have expected to make a big deal about the price of it really seem to be harping on it. You guys seeing that as well?
Yeah. So I had a coworker come to me and like, almost like he was chastising me for $1,000 device, right? And he was like, well, I'm not getting my kids $1,000 telephone. And I was like, well,
don't get them one then.
And that's exactly what I said. It was like, you know, well, what makes your kids entitled to have one in the first place, right? You know, I work hard for my money. This is what I want to spend
on. So hard for it, honey.
But, you know, at the end of the day, right, I think I'm paying like $8 a month per device times two, more than I was on the 7 Plus. And, you know, hey, I can spare $8.
Funny you mentioned kids and their phone. The other day, my daughter said she could go back to a Razor and have no problems. I was like, I can make that happen.
I'd have paid twice as much for this phone. I can't live without it. You know, I love the phone. The whole thing with the pre-release and all the reviews, that was pretty funny. That was some good entertainment during a pretty bad week for me. Yeah, that was all pretty good. And there were some good video reviews and reviews from those folks. And some of them I was just like, yeah, that was kind of useless. You know, it kind of makes it interesting. I mean, you know, like I think you said this in the show notes, Brian. It's like the people who read a lot of these sites that normally get them, they're going to be buying this phone no matter what that site says. It's, you know, get it out there, you know, to where more a different group of people can see it. I know my mom was joking with me, you know, when I told her I'd order it and she thought it was so expensive. And the first Animoji I sent her, I think she now realizes it's well worth the cost because she just loved that to death. She was like, where did that come from? Oh my God, that's so amazing. And she was just, you know, she was all over that Animoji. And then, you know, I had to say, well, your phone can't do it.
Sorry. And that's the other thing, too, is showing off the fun aspects of the phone, like the Snapchat features and the Animoji and that type of thing. It's a smart way to get in front of the inevitable negative press. And the example given in the blog, too, in addition to the cost example, was when the Series 3 LTE Apple Watch launched a couple months ago. You know, the diehard tech sites reported about that Wi-Fi bug that was getting you connected to captive hotspots that have portal information and you can't log into them, but it was still connecting. Not a big deal. Most people I know don't even use a lot of those types of portal Wi-Fi. But, I mean, it was dominated all the news stories around the Series 3 Apple Watch. And it got it's like every time Apple releases a device, they want another bend gate. They want another antenna gate. They want something that they can latch onto and say, see you idiots for buying this thing that's, ha ha, this is what you get for buying this new overpriced toy. And it doesn't even work right. That's what the press wants to get those clicks. And to get ahead of any negative press, it's nice to start seeding things to people where the positive aspects get out there first. And it seems to have worked. I haven't seen, you know, we haven't seen a negative story that's popped up so far, knock wood.
Actually, we did. On the very first day, there was the straight hit piece on Face ID of apparently two siblings that weren't twins but looked very similar to one another, were able to, you know, unlock each other's phone or whatever. And it was clearly in, you know, their white paper that they talked about people who were related, you know, closely related, that shared, you know, similar features, may have a better chance of unlocking each other's phones.
Well, also they reported, too, that you're training the device. So when you have failures and you put in the code, it assumes that that data that you've given it is something that it needs to learn from. So you could, I guess, if your facial features were similar enough, train between two people. It's kind of unlikely. It can only memorize one face. That's one of the restrictions. But it's, yeah, the same sort of FUD. And that type of stuff is going to be inevitable. It's going to pop up. Just like we saw with Touch ID when it first launched is, oh no, people are going to be lifting my fingerprints and doing all sorts of weird stuff. That's not really going to happen. See also every problem the FBI has with Touch ID.
I think the gate we got this week was PR review gate. That was the only gate we got on iPhone 10 week.
Oh, it was also to show that the notch was not that big of a deal. And again, except for a few small exceptions, it's pretty much faded into the background. It's sort of weird to see the horn effect on the screen. And Jason, you discovered today that the VPN indicator, there is no VPN indicator on the iPhone 10 as far as you can tell.
Yeah, so the only way you can tell is to actually go to, you know, settings and see the green slider over on the right that says you're connected to VPN. I wasn't really a fan of that because, you know, I want to know, you know, just at a glance that I'm still connected because a lot of times, you know, if you VPN in and then you put your phone down for 5 minutes and you pick it back up, you're not on VPN anymore. Well, this, you have no indicator at all. So you're going to have to check, I guess, more frequently.
That and the battery indicator were kind of casualties of the lost space up at the top of the phone. There's no more battery indicator. You got to go to control center to see your battery percentage. If you want to see the true percentage.
I've turned mine off a long time ago, so I'd stop being so OCD about it. So that's why I didn't notice it.
Now, Jim, I don't know if you know this, but you can add the battery widget to your notification screen or whatever. And so, like, if you're at the home screen, if you swipe right, it brings over and you can see the actual percentage there of your AirPods and your phone and all that.
I've done that before, but that's a good tip for this phone. I hadn't thought about that. Instead of having to activate control center to see that percentage, you could just do it from that screen there. So that's a good tip. Thanks, Jason. Yeah, I've done that before, yeah.
If you had simply restored your phone, it would have come back.
Yeah, I know. I like to get rid of all the crud once a year. You know, I'm pretty hard on these things and install a bunch of stuff. Although, that was one of the things that I really noticed because I scrolled back through the phone to install my old app. So I just started scrolling through apps that I'd purchased. And over the last 2 years, I mean, I made it back, you know, because I can kind of know, you know, when apps came out or something and I can look at that. Over the last 2 years, I hadn't bought a lot. And then you get like 3 years ago and it's just piles and piles and piles of apps. I mean, I don't even buy probably a fifth of the apps that I used to buy or download, you know, add new free ones or pay for them that I used to in the first couple of years of the iPhone. I guess, you know, it's just a more mature ecosystem now where the stuff I have is the stuff I have. So it's just, it was kind of crazy how few apps I've added over the last 2 years. And then going back in time to see, you know, how many
people quit depending on app purchases and have moved to recurring revenue models. So that you can almost see from your purchase history when that happened, if you look at it like that.
Now, Jim, you and I both got the leather case. How are you liking yours?
I like it a lot. It the first day it was a little of an adjustment for me because this phone feels a little bit thicker than my previous one, and it's obviously heavier than my previous S7. That took some getting used to because, you know, almost every year your phone gets smaller, right? Smaller and lighter. And this year my phone, it definitely got a little bit heavier. And right out of the box, this leather case was pretty slick. It takes a week or two of use to kind of get a little grippiness to it. So right out the box, there was definitely some you got to be careful holding it because it'll slip and slide in your hands. And I guess that's where your silicone would be better right out of the box is it's grippy immediately. This one takes a little time. You got to get some life on the case and some scratches and marks to get you some grippy spots.
A little dirt and pine tar.
Yep. Yeah.
Did y'all watch the iFixit teardown this week of the new 10?
Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
I like that the front-facing camera isn't part of the display anymore. And they've sort of reversed the way you tear it apart, whereas used to you would take, or at least on the 5S and whatnot, those generation, you would take the back off and have to take everything out to get to the display, essentially. And now you take the front off, and if you break the glass on the back, you basically have to tear everything out of the phone. Sort of, you know, you go front to back instead of back to front like you used to. I just thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, it's not very fixable on your own. And it's very, very fragile. The drop tests were, I can just imagine you drop this once and it's goodbye iPhone.
I also like that the Touch ID was tied to the screen, whereas now Face ID is not tied to the screen.
The double-decker logic board was pretty cool too.
Yeah, that was really neat. The way they explained it, they were like, well, they basically fold it in half. The battery was a lot bigger than I kind of expected. You know, I know it's a 2-cell battery now instead of a 1-cell, but I just didn't expect it to be sort of L-shaped.
I was surprised that the battery is actually bigger than what's in the 8 Plus.
Yeah, I couldn't even tell you what the back of this phone looks like because my case came in, you know, before the phone did. So basically, I took it out of the package, kind of looked at it real quick. I popped open the case. I popped it in the case, and it hadn't been out of the case since. I didn't even notice that the back was glass. You know, it was that kind of thing. Like, okay, I see it. And now, I couldn't even tell you that was part of it if I just didn't know.
You get a new phone, and for three seconds, you go, oh, pretty, and then pop into the case.
And I'm still toying with the idea of the fold-over charge case.
The folio case.
The folio thing from Apple. I want to see one in the store first, so I haven't been by to see one. I want to go get a look at it and put it in my hand and see how it feels.
Now, Brian, how are you coping with having a silver phone?
You know, I thought it would bug me a little bit, but it's not so bad. Of course, the phone that I mentioned in the last episode that I intended to sell is going to be here within the two-week window of my return window on the silver phone. So theoretically, if I give up hope on selling it, I could just swap my silver phone for the space gray one, if I'm so inclined. I've been watching the prices on...
Don't wuss out. Sell the phone.
We'll see. It just depends on what I can get for it. I mean, I've been looking at the prices on eBay. It's not as... The supply is not as constrained as people have been led to believe. They're cranking them out pretty quick.
I think there's going to be a pickup here. The more people see them in the wild, it's going to be, oh, I want that. Kind of like the AirPods were, where they were immediately sold out, but then it got even worse because when the first ones got out and people saw them, they're like, oh, wow, what are those? And, you know, and then, I mean, that's why I rushed out to get some because I wasn't even going to buy any. And Brian ordered some and he's like, man, you know, the sound is great. They fit great. It's not like, you know, normal Apple AirPods at all. And I'm like, all right, I got to have a pair of these. And then I went online to order it. It was like 6 to 8 weeks. And I was like, Craigslist, baby. And that's where I bought my first set of AirPods was off Craigslist. I paid a $25 fee for being late to the game is the way I look at it. You know, never look back. You know, I think there's going to be a bump, especially as we get closer to Black Friday and Christmas. People are going to want this phone. The more they start seeing them. I mean, at work this week, I'll hear people talking about it and they'll say, oh, you know, you're going to get one. And I kind of wave my phone at them. And they're like, you already got it? It's already out? I thought, you know, blah, blah, blah. People don't even realize that it's like in people's hands yet.
Well, if you do a good job on the pre-order, you will get it on time.
Yeah, I had a coworker come over to my desk, I guess yesterday, and grabbed the phone and, you know, brought up, he's a car guy, I'm a car guy. Drove my BMW through the mountains over the weekend, took some nice fall pictures while I was up there. And so I pulled out the phone, you know, launched the Photos app, started scrolling through, and he was like, oh my God, this is awesome. Like, what phone is this? And I was like, really? I said, you know, it's the iPhone 10. He was like, no. He's like, I'm going to have to give up my Android. I got to get one of these. Right. So I thought that, you know, somebody who'd been a dyed in the wool Android person in 3 minutes of, you know, just seeing it unlock with Face ID and how good the cameras were and how great the screen, you know, he was like, this thing is all screen. And I was like, yep, that's exactly what it is.
Have you guys been bitten by the autocorrect bug where the I is changed to an A question mark?
Nope.
I have.
I fixed mine in the, you could go into the keyboard settings and just add a shortcut and it does. I've noticed it a lot in coworkers' text messages that I read on my Mac from iMessage. It's in there. It's like every other message I see it in there.
Yeah, the Mac, I'm seeing it more than I'm seeing it on my iPhone, but it's still kind of annoying. So what did you guys think about Warby Parker allowing folks to use the iPhone X's true depth camera to show you how you'd look in glasses?
That was pretty swift, man. I really like that. I have three pairs of Warby Parkers. So I'm definitely a big fan of that, although I don't have a 10, but I'm definitely a fan of them getting on their game with that technology.
I think it's just the tip of the iceberg, right? I think we're going to see more and more and more apps use this true depth camera in ways that nobody kind of ever expected. So I'm looking forward to seeing what the developers can come up with.
Yeah, just like with Snapchat, just seeing this come out of the gate, just like with the augmented reality and seeing IKEA and others allow you to do the furniture and the other things that they do. I'm glad that folks are jumping on this pretty quick. It's neat, and I think we're going to see more of it. You know, when Amazon announced that device where you could try on clothes in front of it and see how they would look, imagine if you had something with a true depth, how realistic you could get with that.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty sharp. I own a couple of pair of Warby Parkers now, and I'm about ready for a new pair, so I'm definitely going to have to check that out.
Well, I guess the last thing that I wanted to bring up before we close it out for the week is it was revealed that Pokemon Go creator Niantic was looking at doing a new game based on Harry Potter that's going to be an augmented reality game. So I saw that, and it's not just up Jim's alley. That is actually Jim's alley. So what do you think about that, Jim?
It's Jim's Diagon Alley.
I think it'd be pretty awesome. Yeah, it's my Diagon Alley. No, that would be really awesome. I'm a big Harry Potter fan. Yeah, I just think, you know, the characters, the sheer number of characters would allow, you know, a pretty neat experience with something like that. So looking forward to see what they can do with it. I'm sure it'll be, you know, like Pokemon, where when it drops, it's like massive, and, you know, and then it'll settle into a, you know, into an actually good game, kind of like Pokemon did.
Just another thing to drain your battery.
Exactly. That's been nice too, having a new phone. You just being able to, I haven't seen this one hit what's it called, the 20%, you know, the battery saver mode yet. The battery really lasts. I've been real impressed with it so far.
I will say I've had a lot of friends and coworkers that come up and will tell me, ever since I've upgraded iOS 11, my battery dies on my phone. I swear this is planned obsolescence, which always kind of makes me laugh and inwardly roll my eyes just a little bit. However, oh, you were going to say something, Jason?
Yeah, so I had a coworker come to me and tell me, he's like, you know, I don't buy Apple because they turn Siri off on their old devices when they come out with new ones. And I was like, what? So he bought into the hype somewhere. Also the same guy that talked to me about not having $1,000 phones for his kids. So I guess he was on a roll that week.
Was Siri a member of the Illuminati, the Pentaveret, along with Colonel Sanders and the Queen of England and the Gettys and the Rothschilds and... Nice. So I married an axe murderer reference there for folks. You know, the funny little anecdote though. I was in Miami a couple of weeks ago for a client, and I was talking to someone, and they did something that kind of surprised me. It's like they held up their Android phone apropos of nothing, and were complaining about their battery life. I swear, whenever there's a new Android update, I swear they do something to kill it on the old phones. So it's one of those things where, regardless of the manufacturer, regardless of the OS. It's that perception, whether or not it's true. I won't doubt anyone if they've seen this, but I think whenever we're trained, whenever a new version of an OS comes out, regardless of the device or the manufacturer, instinct is to go, aha, this is how they get you. By the way, I never saw that with my phone other than the normal, my battery is a year old and I use my phone all the time, so it's lasting less. But I don't see that with the, I ran the 11 betas this summer, and those are by design even more battery thirsty. Because they have the diagnostics turned on, and I didn't have any issues. So all I can do is a little emoji shrug when people ask me about that, because it's not been my experience.
Mine was really bad at the end there, but I run, you know, a couple of games that I do play are all, you know, they use your location when you're playing them. And I mean, some days I could be at 30% by 11 a.m., you know, but that was, you know, just plug it back in and keep going. That's why I carry batteries with me. But this one, man, it's been going strong, and that screen, if you haven't seen one and you're out there, you need to get yourself into an Apple store and check out the screen on this iPhone 10, because it's a sight to behold.
They truly are beautiful. Well, gentlemen, that's all we have time for this week. So anything else before we go?
I just want to apologize to the guys because I left my mic at home. So if I sound like crap this week, it's not the Sony headphones that I'm wearing with the microphone. If I sound good, then I'll say... It's the amazing Sony headphones that I have that you're hearing me on this week. So I'm remote for work, using what I got in the bag, so to speak.
I'll try and fix it in post-production as best I can. I'll re-record all of your dialogue myself and call it a special edition.
Fix me in post, Brian. Fix me in post.
The part of Jim will be played by Brian doing a dual role.
That would be hilarious. I'm going to get a message from Brian tomorrow saying, it sounds so bad, Jim. You just need to re-record your three or four bits.
I'm going to replace you with Morgan Freeman. He's going to read all of your lines this week. His rates were very affordable. Anywho, well, that should do it for this week, fellas. Talk to you next time. Have a good one, fellas. Later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Please visit infiniteloopback.com for show notes and previous episodes. Follow us on Twitter. We're at InfinLoopback. That's at INFIN Loopback. I'm Brian B. That's at BRIANB. Jim is at Big Jim. That's at BIGJIM. Jason is at JSNYNG. That's at JSNYNG. And Brad is at Meester Idle. That's at MEESTERIDLE. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.